Hello and welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast, The Shootout. We're doing a special this week on the pod where I'm joined by regulars David and Akim. What are we saying, boys?
Very well, thank you.
You well?
Very well. Yes.
Good man. David, yourself?
Yeah, you good? Doing all right. Thanks, Jordan.
Good man, good man. Right. We've also got a special guest on the pod this week. We're going to be joined, well, we are joined by the former Charlton and West Ham player, now an author and human performance consultant, Kevin George. What are you saying, bruv?
All good, man.
You good?
All good.
There's the author bit on the end of all those kind of credentials make you just feel a bit like, yeah,
buzzing.
Man, I'm out here.
I love it. I never even used to read as a kid.
But so now you're writing books.
It's mad. If you brought a book into this room when I was a youth, I'd have jumped through the window.
Yeah.
It's my kryptonite.
Yeah. But now you see the value of books and written one yourself.
Massively.
I've got you in this week because I want to speak primarily about your book, but also about the work you're doing beyond the book as well. So let's start about your book. You've written a successful book titled Psychology. Tell us why you decided, first of all, to write this book, because it's very unusual for a former pro thing to then go into the literacy world.
I wrote the book because of my experience that, for the good and bad of my experiences, because I realised there's so many players that are going through it and no one speaks about it. So whether it be the great times I had and I performed so well, but I didn't even know what it was, is something that just happened. Mm-hmm. No one's articulated this. And also the bad times I went through, whenever it be when I was anxious or my performance were dipping, and it was, okay, it's not, oh, he's having a bad time. No, what are the purposes behind it? And then to kind of give something out there that if there's an aspiring player or a parent or a coach who wants to really understand the game, there's no resource out there for them. There's nothing, which is crazy. So I thought, I'm going to do this book and I'm going to get the minds, hearts and minds of people from all around the world to open up and share stories they've never shared before.
And have you had people, parents, you know, aspiring players come up to you since and talk about how the book has given them an insight into the world that is football?
Massively. I had a parent of one of the young pros at Arsenal ring me up, just mind blown. And it was funny because he was just kept going, oh my God, it's amazing, it's this, it's that. And then he was like, oh, don't tell me anything about it because I'm not finished it yet. I've nearly finished it. And he never got to the part where his son's in it. But because his son's 17, I asked for permission for him to be in there. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, don't you remember? And I was telling you about the book and I asked for your permission for, you know, him to be in the book. I don't know why I'm avoiding saying his name, but it's Matthew Dennis, who plays for Arsenal in England.
Okay.
And he's like, oh, you spoil it for me now. And he was chuffed that his son was in it because he was blown away by the book. You got Gail Clichy who, I mean, again, people aren't even finishing it and they're messaging me. He said it was amazing. You've got Taisa Moreno, plays for AC Milan and Brazil women's team. Mm-hmm. Like, the feedback coming in is just crazy. Michelle Brunning, someone who actually influenced me. Michelle Brunning is credited with revolutionising Belgian football. Because obviously Belgium wasn't seen to having good players or a good team back in the day, right? And he trained like Dries Mertens and a few other guys. And he literally, I've got a quote that actually I use when I'm promoting the book. So it's almost like, he's like part of the underground in football where a lot of people won't know who he is unless you're in the game, but he's well respected. Mm-hmm. So, it's been getting great feedback. It's a number one bestseller. The reviews are great on Amazon. It's just been acquired by a publisher, so I've not actually put that out there yet, but it's going to be in the shop. It's going to get translated into other languages. And
wicked, wicked. Yeah. Akin, you're a parent. And you have a child that's in a football academy currently. What are the, I suppose, pitfalls, concerns you have? And we're talking kind of on the more kind of mental as opposed to physical side of entering the game that you have as a parent for your child that maybe a book like this could potentially help you with?
Okay, my son is only six. And at six, his passion lies in another sport, in athletics, sprinting. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what kind of attracted the club to him in any case. But I have no interest in athletics. Mm-hmm. My passion is football. I'm conscious of being that parent who pushes my dream onto their child. And ever since he started playing at 3 years old or whatever, I was always conscious of not trying to put too much pressure on him. If he didn't want to go, should I not let him go? Mm-hmm. Or should I push him? You know, so those types of things. And then also I've seen other parents as well, even at 3, 4, other parents take it weirdly serious. Yeah, and it's like, wow. And it's like, I get it or do I get it? Nah, this is overboard. And then seeing children cry and all that stuff. And so I'm very conscious of that. I don't want to have a relationship with him where it's non-existent and he has some kind of barrier towards his dad because of something that should bring us together. So in terms of books like that, I'm hoping that they can give me a kind of insight into how I can manage that situation, that relationship, because to me that's the most important thing. The disappointment of being dropped or whatever and stuff like that, I think I'll be able to naturally support him with that. Mummy would naturally be able to support him with that. Those things are good for life and for, you know, life training. So I think I'm fine with that. My worry is managing the relationship and not putting too much pressure from me, if that makes sense.
It does, it does. So, Kevin, do you hear from a lot of players that are young or talk about when they were young about the pressures put on them from an early age and how that manifests throughout their career? Because I know that in tennis, I'm a big tennis fan, it's my favourite sport, and a lot of tennis players, a lot of high-profile ones, it's put it on a par. I love tennis. Yeah, I love tennis. A lot of tennis players who are very high profile will talk about how they didn't want to go into tennis, but their parent or their dad, in most cases I can think of, forced them. Do you hear from a lot of footballers that talk about the pressures that were put on them and how that mentally affected their journey through their career?
Yeah, so I do work across the Premier League teams, some football league teams, and I do a lot of work with the parents as well. And so stereotypically it's a lot of the dads that put pressures on their kids. They feel like just because they're fans of football, they know football, and they start directing their kids. And you have so many problems that come with that, because first of all, you're not applying that same attention and care in other parts, i.e. their education or their other interests. So then that means it's blatantly about them and not their child. So the car journeys are not fun, where the player just wants to relax and, you know, just be present. Instead they got to hear coaching tips from their dad. But it becomes a massive issue. But pressure from parents is only one part of it, because you've got the pressure of the situation that you're in. So, for example, your son's six. By the time, if he's still in the system at 12, he would have seen a few of his friends gone. So now he's aware that I have to impress my teammates to give me the ball and earn their respect. I also have to impress my coaches. If I don't, I'm gone. Now, no other kids understand that pressure unless you're a performer in any other field. So that pressure, they're going to only experience that when they become adults at work. You're experiencing that as a kid. And it's not all bad, because I think sometimes we try to overprotect people.
Yes, I agree.
So I think sometimes it's good, because, you know, if things don't work out, you've been exposed to that. I've seen the benefits as an adult now. When I work in schools and Ofsted come in, the teachers are like drug dealers and Ofsted are like the police. They start running around, oh my God! And I'm like, just do what you've been doing. If you've been doing your job right, then you're cool. But that pressure's nothing to me, because I know I've been in the football environment where I train well. Doesn't matter, it's not a game. I play well in a game. You got next week. You win the league. You got to win it again. Like, literally, it's on.
My wife and, is a teacher, by the way. I'm going to let her know about
drug dealing. But it's pros and cons to everything. So it's almost like the pressure is intense. But the bottom line is, with great risk comes great reward. You want to be a footballer, you're going to have it. And unfortunately, for kids, that's how it is. For parents, it's just a case of, can I be there? And so even in my gym, one of my friends, his kid's at a club, and he's always talking about, sometimes he refers to himself when he's talking about his kid and the situation his kid's in. And I say, listen, your child is so young, I think he's 10. And I say, you're making this about you and you're making it bigger than what it is. I goes, if it's consuming you like this, you cannot be there for your child. You can't. And I said to him, it should be fun. If it doesn't work out, so what? He might be a successful architect, and the lessons he learned from this experience here has actually helped him to be successful in another field. But some just get wrapped up into the game.
David, your mob, Tottenham, Pochettino, from what I... This is a nice question. You've laughed. It's a nice question.
I like how he refers to them as your mob.
That's everybody, to be fair. But with you, it's a little bit more disdain. Yeah.
Over there.
From what I see with his management, David, he seems to have that kind of father-ish son type relationship, more so than a lot of coaches I can think of. Pep's maybe another one as well. The way he talks about Ali and Kane, and he's protected Lloris in recent weeks as well. It's very much that kind of relationship from what I gather anyway. How important do you feel, in particular with the younger players, is a manager's role in not only making sure that physically and technically they're developing as players, but mentally they're able to deal with the rigours of being a professional footballer at that level?
Enormous. And part of the reason why I say that is because you get to a certain age group, I think it's above 16s, I'm right in saying, where you're forced to live away from home at that point. So, you know, if you're 16, 17, you're going to live with a foster family near the training ground, near the club. You know, that's quite a, you know, I mean, I don't know, I've not done it. I'm thinking that's quite a daunting experience. Mm-hmm. It can be for, you know, some people. You don't know how they're going to adapt. You don't know how they're going to adapt to living with, you know, strangers, or perhaps living with their teammates, or seeing them perhaps in a more intense environment that's not just on the training pitch or on a match day. And it's being able to handle, I mean, you can, perhaps you can tell me, it's perhaps being able to help that transition. It's also then noticing perhaps when they're struggling, if their performance is below par in training or on a match day, they can't quite translate what's going on in training to what's going on the pitch,
or even if they're doing well but still not enjoying it.
Well,
do you know what I mean?
Well, that absolutely. And I think one thing that, I mean, to the press or in the public eye, obviously we've got no idea what goes on when the doors are closed, and it is something Pochettino is excellent at. It is protecting his players. And I think the one exception to the rule, and I can't say he didn't protect Marcus Edwards, but he was very quick to draw those comparisons with Messi. But then he was very quick to turn around and say, perhaps I shouldn't have done that. It perhaps threw a bit too much pressure in his direction to then go ahead and perform. And I think that is perhaps why we haven't heard as much about his development in recent times. And maybe there's other things there that we perhaps don't know about. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So again, maybe with that in mind, I mean, you might be able to tell me, did you know guys that, you know, went off, lived away from home, came into training, struggled on the training pitch because of trying to readapt to their environment? Or do you see that now?
You see it all the time. You see it with players that get bought and they get cast as flops. And I don't think they have flopped. I think that when you buy a player, there should be a process that you look at to see if they can adapt. You also got the young players, yes, who move to other places and they struggle. Some move away and do well because there's no distractions. And then, you know, you mentioned about father figures, but some players just don't have attachment in general. You could have someone at home or not. But the bottom line is, doesn't mean because someone's there that you actually have that safety from them. They could be someone who's abusing you at home. Mm. And I always draw the example of Mike Tyson, who didn't have a father figure, but when he was young, but then he had Customato, his coach, who gave him that ability to go and kick on because he had that reassurance at home, to the stage where he never had compliments as a kid. He was seen as fat. He was seen as basically a piece of, I can't say the word, mm-hmm. by his mum and the people around him. Mm. And he never got compliments. So when Cuss gave him compliments, he thought Cuss was gay. Mm, that's okay. How bad the situation is. And okay. I think when you look at footballers, there's so many that lack that safety and that attachment. And so because of that, they don't feel safe. And if you don't feel safe, how are you going to behave? Do you see what I'm saying? Mm. And then so what happens in football is, like, we then judge them for it. Mm. And that's a massive problem. But it's because it's lazy work from either, whether it be welfare, whether it be coaches. Like, my question I always say is, do we value the youth worker or not? And the reason why I say that is sometimes a lot of these boys come from inner city places, right? You've got youth workers, and we see that, okay, oh, this is great. They looked out for them. Let's sign this player now. They don't have that guidance from that person. So when they go off the rails, then we're like, oh, this player's this. Put your socks up. You're lucky to be here. You've got one chance. I'm thinking, well, hold on a minute. Like, you know that kid has literally struggled to even get a decent meal at home, and mum might be on drugs, and there's so many wild stories that happens behind the scenes, but the people in the clubs are not equipped to look after them. And that's why I say professional football is unprofessional. It blows my mind. There's so much money in the game, and, like, there's no one. If I owned a club, you just brought up Marcus Edwards, right? I would employ someone to make sure he's straight. That he shouldn't be on loan. He should be a player that's worth about 50 mil. When Poch said about the Lionel Messi comment, people saying he shouldn't have said it, right? Which is fair enough. But the bottom line is, that just shows the talent he has. He's not hitting that standard, and he's not at Tottenham. So the question is why. Now, Spurs and probably everyone else is going to blame him. He's got behavioural problems. He's a kid. Bottom line, he's a kid. So he's just become an adult now because he's 18. But he's been displaying these behaviours from before. Mm. So my thing is, and this is what blew my mind when I went into education, when they had the pupil premium, right? There was funds set aside for people that struggle in behaviour, who are struggling to reach their goals in terms of achievements in education. In football, there's nothing. Oh, we're going to try this.
bad egg.
Can I just add to that? I've said on the pod before as well, and it was to do with physical health. I added a bit of mental health at that time, but it's now we're on the topic, more relevant now. Something you just said, professional football is unprofessional. I couldn't agree more. It's like the Wild West, and nothing to me, it's not by design that money's come into the game. It's just happened to be that way because people enjoy football. It's just been a reaction of what, you know, they've been lucky almost, but it's not caught up yet. So it's a multi-billion pound industry that's being conducted like the Wild West. You have a commodity that's worth 50 million pounds, whatever amount. You pay, let's say, 5 million pounds a year in wages, but you don't want to spend an extra 100 grand, 200 grand a year on a team of youth workers, shall we say, or social worker, dietitian, physio, all dedicated to that one commodity. And then when the commodity doesn't return the investment, we're now blaming the commodity itself when we haven't actually looked after it. Yeah. And the reason why I'm referring to these people as commodities is because I'm trying to kind of highlight what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, they are.
In terms of in a business, and then they are, exactly. Yeah. But in the business world, when you have an investment that's worth X amount of money, you're going to do everything.
Look after it.
You're going to do everything you can to look after it. But in football, with it being the Wild West, so to speak, it will be left alone. The person will be left alone. And then sometime, depending on the manager or the management team, certain methods will be tried. And those methods might be just because this manager's good at that. They haven't taken into consideration the player, where the player's coming from. It's all too left to the individual. Does that make sense?
It does.
There's not an actual process in place.
Yeah,
and I think that's so correct what Kevin's just said in terms of a team. I mean, sorry, in schools, they have the whole kind of team of, I don't know, people, that you called it.
When I came out, for me, that was a massive education for me. Like, I wouldn't have wrote this book. I wouldn't have been delivering the programmes in football if I never went and worked in schools and doing the behaviour therapy programmes. But even though I mentioned about the youth worker, at the moment in football, you've got sports psychologists, you've got agents, you've got coaches, you've got all these people. But actually, you need someone who's actually lived the experience, who's educated. And that's why I'm trying to push myself to be that person. And I'm going to tell you why. Sports psychologists will be like, what's going on for you? Looking at the personal side, right? And they will look at the playing side. But if you've not played the game, you're going to miss tricks. So I would see, me personally, I hid when I played, right? So I would run up and down, I can tackle, I can do all those things. When it came to making myself vulnerable, getting the ball under pressure, I wasn't interested. And I was so skilled at hiding. And I see so many people do it in this country. So I'd be like, yeah, you know, like, aggressive, and I look like I'm on it. But really, I'm not on it. And so many players do it. And I'm talking about at Premier League level.
And I can imagine you could recognise that now.
I can recognise it. But the thing is, not just me because I did it, but there'll be players who have had that experience. Remember, we talk about contact time. When you look at the amount of time they've trained, when you clocked up all those hours, they're so skilled. And if they go and do a degree in therapy, in any kind of therapy, now it's not a case of, oh yeah, I know what you've been through, I've been there. No, it's I've got theory to back up my knowledge. Helps me to articulate it. Not to dump my stuff on you and think I know what you're going through, but I'm skilled. At the moment, we've got sports psychologists or former players that are coaches or agents, and they don't understand the person. They don't understand the value, even though they've been through it themselves. It's like schools. We all go through school. The school system fails, right? But yet, we all literally say, you need to do well. Bearing in mind, so if I have my daughter now, she gets older, I'm going to, you need to do well in school. I've studied learning styles and all that, but if I didn't, I'd be like, you need to do well. Knowing school failed me, but I'm going to push her through that and then look at her when she doesn't do her work properly. The world's crazy.
I want to go back to the point that you kind of both made, especially you, Aiken, about the kind of idea of a team that kind of is invested in a particular commodity, as you put it, an expensive one as well. And I suppose that this David is probably most exemplified when I was watching the Man City.
Sorry, it's not expensive, it's high value. And sorry, okay. There's a reason why investment make the difference.
It's
expensive is something that costs.
Okay, it's an investment.
Yeah,
into that player.
Yeah,
David, I watched the. I don't know if you've seen it, the Man City documentary on Amazon.
I've seen one episode, and that's not because I haven't seen the rest. Not because I haven't enjoyed it. It's a time thing. But
No, that's fair enough. But one of the things, I mean, there's lots of flaws in the documentary for me. But one of the things for me that jumped out watching the whole documentary was the amount of staff that Pep Guardiola has behind the scenes. Now, I don't know if they've got the most amount of staff of all the Premier League teams. I'll probably put good money on a bet that they probably do. But it seems to me like, and maybe I'm making a bit of a leap here, but he spent a lot of time, Pep Guardiola, in his time between Bayern Munich and Manchester City in America. I would hazard a strong guess he absorbed a lot of the American sports out there as well and how they go about their teams and their sports. Is it essential now that people look at what City are doing and Pep are doing in terms of the way he deals with players individually, the amount of staff he has who might seem like hangers-on, but there might be one person dedicated to Phil Foden to make sure that as a young boy he is growing, that he is happy and that he's developing. It seems like he's got so many people around him that they can't all be physios and sports scientists. There must be someone dedicated to individual people.
Sure, he'll have someone looking after his social media, won't he? Or, you know, making sure he's, you know, that's maintained and looked after, and any bad comments coming his way, perhaps regulated or what have you. And that could, you know, all these elements, if you like, that probably is regulated at the, you know, at the highest level.
All the clubs, you think?
Yeah, I think it's. I do think it's a necessity, and I remember seeing something. I think it was Watford, and you know, you mentioned the school system, fails, you know, a lot of people, and you're right, it does. And I think this is something Watford seem to pick up on to make sure that football then doesn't go and fail them as well, which is particularly with their young players. They put them. When they're training, they still put them through some form of education, so they can be well placed if their football careers don't quite work out the way perhaps they'd anticipated. So I think there has to be some kind of infrastructure in place. You say Phil Foden probably doesn't have 9 or 10 people working for him. He probably doesn't. You're right, but that backlog of staff is to ensure welfare. You know, and the like must be taken care of. I mean, I certainly don't fully understand the sacrifice perhaps footballers go through to have that career.
It's a great sacrifice. I mean, you said about Watford, and this is no criticism to Watford, but I think the education they put their players through is pretty much the same as the other clubs.
Okay.
And the education of football clubs is trash.
Is it bad?
It's the minimum. And so when you look at the sacrifice, you've got to look at it like this. Nowadays, if I'm about 13 or 14, I'm at a club, they might take me out of my school and put me in the school with the other guys. So now I don't have my organic connection to friends. I've got my football friends. So I'm travelling probably just out of my area. Don't really have experiences I would have with my family and my extended family. Get a scholarship, get a pro. 21 club doesn't want me anymore. Where's my foundation? Mm. See, now this is bigger than football. So that's my foundation or my connection and my education. Doing a BTEC. What are you going to do with that? So you're behind everybody else. But it's allowed to happen. It's allowed to happen. And this is the problem that you have. And this is why players get depressed, because they can't just go into something else. Because they're not skilled enough. They're not. Don't get me wrong. The PFA come around and they encourage you to do courses. I'll be honest with you. I'm looking at this. I'm putting everything into football. I'm not thinking I'm going to make it. I had a belief, but I didn't even know what I wanted to do. Because even in schools, I was saying to Jeff earlier, I didn't have insight into neuroscience and human behaviour, which I love now. Schools are just talking about GCSEs, do well in maths, English, whatever. They didn't open my mind up to other stuff. And when I found football, it was a love affair. That was it. I honed in on it. So players are lacking. They're suffering from a lack of choice, but also they're ill-equipped. And this is a massive problem at the moment. Massive.
I've got here, as I mentioned earlier, Ron, human performance consultant. Tell us a little bit about what that actually entails and what that role is.
It was born from me not knowing what I wanted to do, and I thought, okay, you've got personal development and professional development, and I'm thinking it grinds my gears that they're separate. I think they should be one. And I always look at one of my favourite Shakespeare quotes is, the world's a stage, right? So how I perform in my relationship, how I perform at work, how I perform everywhere is based on my feelings.
So I created my own role where I go into schools and I look at a teacher who teaches from an auditory perspective. And now, if my learning style doesn't adhere to that, I'm not intelligent. And I'm a kinesthetic learner. I learn from movement. So I'd go into a school and actually help teachers make their plans, or not even make their plans, probably execute their plans more creatively and less predictable. Because we as people like to be curious, but even more so as children. You create curiosity, you've got the best learners. In football, as we touched on earlier, I look at it like this. You've got some of the best talents that go prison and drop out of the game. We leave, it blows my mind that we leave it to chance that people come through, that they show their best version of themselves, and then coaches take credit for it, or clubs take credit for it. I'm just thinking, this is crazy.
Are there other sports or countries that you can think of that do that better than football and England do?
What do you mean?
In terms of not just, by chance, as you mentioned there, just hoping that this guy's talented, I'm sure he'll make it with some coaching. Are there any other examples of people that are getting it right? And that word, invest in these people who are clearly talented, but don't just rely on their talent to make, you know, make them flourish.
I don't know if there are other countries. I don't know enough to know that they're getting it right. But one thing I say that they do better is that they allow the player to be the player. So, for example, when I spoke to Colin Kazim Richards about my book, he spoke about lack of cultural understanding in England, right? And that will be because of a, from a race perspective and from a class perspective. And he was kind of judged for it. That still happens to now, and it comes up in many forms, whether it be you got an attitude or your body language, all these things come up. So as a player, and if that's you, you're judging me. I don't feel comfortable. Because if I said to you, oh, what's wrong with your accent? You can't change your accent. That's just who, that's a part of your identity, right? In Brazil, they embrace it. That's who you are. If you're coming from the streets or whatever it is, he goes that they can't understand in Brazil how we operate in England. He goes, it blows their mind. Whereas in Brazil, they actually look out for you as a person. They embrace it.
And is that why not many Brazilians do well in the Premier League, despite being talented? There's not a plethora of Brazilians. Can you think of many Brazilians that do well in the Premier League?
No, it's not because of that. Do you know what it is? It's because our style of play over here...
It's a football thing.
Yeah, so it used to be terrible. It's better because we've got the influx of the foreigners and we embrace a more technical style. Then you've got the weather and you've got the food. If I'm Brazilian and I know that I come from a country that embraces risk... and the art of football, because everyone here in this country, we embrace it, but we don't like it. You get managers say, "We're going to pass," or "Yeah, we're going to let you play." And then when preseason,
play the percentages,
wait, preseason's there
in the mixer.
Preseason's there, emotions are cool because it doesn't matter. As soon as the season starts, get rid of it. And so if I'm a Brazilian now, and everything's about fun, to the stage where Michael Bill, who was assistant manager at Sao Paulo, he said in my book, if we did a negative sub, so if I took off a number 10 or a striker and didn't replace them with that, or even if I did it anyway, we'll get booed. You can only add strikers. So if I'm a Brazilian, I grew up in that culture and I come here, I'm like, oh, what's this? The game's at 100 miles an hour. Why ain't this player just getting his head up and giving me the ball? Like, why can't he do that? Why is it so quick? What? You don't enjoy it.
I'm going to cut you there. The most recent example, did you hear the interview that Paul Pogba did after the... What was the game where he gave the ball away recently?
Wolves.
No, more recent than that. He scored the penalty. What game was that?
The game before last.
And there was another goal.
Everton.
Yeah. And he gave the ball away. Yeah. And Jeff Shrees asked him in the interview something about along the lines of, you know, you were involved in the concession of the goal. And he said, I know that I should just give the ball away sometimes, but it's not in me. Sometimes I feel I have to pass and play. And I thought that was very, very pertinent to the continental attitude towards football. Paul Pogba just would rather risk getting caught with the ball and letting it go in than just kicking it down the channels. And does that kind of speak to the kind of continental attitude towards football, that it is more about risk averse as opposed to just playing percentages?
Oh, 1,000%. And this is why we lose players. In my book, Scott Parker was a number 10. The world doesn't know that. He's one of the best in the country.
Back at Charlton,
played for England, one of the best. What happens? Doesn't fit into Kerbs.
Defensive midfielder.
Yeah, doesn't fit into Kerbs' system. And then he goes to meet Paul Lintz. Paul Lintz says something to him again. You'd have to find out about that. But he changes his style. We lose players. Pogba was one of the best players in the world in his age group. No. Listen, I'm talking about academy.
At youth level.
So he's one of the best players in the world, right? Because he was free. Went to Juve, one of the best. Manu have bought him, and people saying, oh, he's this, he's that. And I said, listen, you don't lose it. So what has changed?
Exactly.
And when you put the shackles on the player,
exactly.
Like, he's not motivated by getting a ball and just passing it. He could do that all day, but he's not Pogba. That's not what made Man United pay the 80 mil for him. That's not what it is. Freedom. Or 90 mil, yeah. Yeah, but it's not. And so what it is at the end of the day, what makes him one of the best players is that he takes risk, and with great risk comes great reward.
Is an English version of what you're saying also Ross Barkley? We're seeing under a new manager that does want to play football, we're seeing a different Ross Barkley as opposed to when he was under the managers before Everton, for example.
Yeah.
He was kind of drifting a little bit. He wasn't really kicking on. Whereas now we're seeing the Ross Barkley that I think we all initially thought we were going to see 4 years ago. Yeah. Is he an English version of what you're saying?
It's tough, obviously, because we're not there and we're not Ross Barkley. But there's two things it could be. Yes, the manager. And also when you're playing with players that are not on your wavelength. When you've got talent like Ross Barkley, Pogba and all of that, fans don't understand if you're not playing well. Because they think, oh, you know, you should be doing this. But if someone's not on your cellular level, forget it. Like, I can go to the park. You guys go to play football with someone at the park and they're not good. You make a run. They don't see it. They take too many touches.
Now, you stop making that run as well.
Yeah, and your motivation seeps. Just because you get paid a certain amount of money, you're just thinking, oh, this brother's dead. That's what you're thinking. Mm.
And again, just one more name. Is Mesut Ozil akin to that as well? He gets a lot of heat at my club.
Yeah.
But people say about Mesut Ozil, he should be doing more. But something that an article was saying to me is, what people don't understand is, Mesut Ozil is so technically and intelligently gifted.
Yeah.
I'm making up words now, but so gifted. If you're not on his level, he struggles and he looks bad because he's not making the pass we want him to make. But he sees something that no one else can see. But if Giroud or if whoever's up front doesn't make that run because they're not on his level, then Ozil won't make that through pass. Is he another example of someone?
Yes, 1,000%. He's probably the best one. So with Ozil, and I always have to start by saying this because when people listen, they'll be like, oh yeah, you know, he's not working hard enough. So I'm not saying he does not have a bad game. But his game is dependent on others. For prime example, Arsenal have Torreira, or even if you go back to, say, Flamini, right? They can perform in any team because they're not dependent on anyone else. They can run around and tackle. Mm. Not taking away from anything they do with the ball. But if I'm Ozil, I need you to give me the ball. I need you to, one, be aware and be brave enough to get on the ball and open up in an attacking space, because we can have crabs, wall passes, sideways and back. I need you to be technically gifted. And this is why, when Cazorla got injured, Arsenal struggled because Ozil was up top and no one was giving him the ball. So he needs someone to give him the ball, but he needs someone to make the movements for him. And this is why when the team doesn't play well, who do they pick out? Because he's not running. And the reason why we pick him out is because he doesn't fit into our beliefs as our culture. If he was in Spain or if he was in Brazil, they wouldn't be picking him out. And also, it's unfair to judge him based on qualities that he doesn't hold. So, for example, when Arsenal lose, why don't we blame Ramsey for not creating goals? Why are we always looking at the defensive side? Because the game's about both, right? Mm. It's about stopping goals and creating goals. But we always look at that way, and this is why England struggle, because what our values and beliefs are based on war, fight for the club, die for the club, put your head where it
blood,
counts,
guts,
all that.
That's something I find so interesting in terms of, we don't criticise for not creating the goals, we criticise, and it's, I think I've mentioned this again, even the analysis that you see on TV, everything we see about football is about, oh, we look at a goal, and the first thing we do is why the defence failed. And we don't break it down into a structure of attack. Look at this movement there that opened up that space. Look at that movement and the finish was in the corner. As if these things... And in English football, it's like attack is left to chance. Okay, we organise defence in this way. These structures, when the ball's here, do that. When they have the ball there, do that. But in attack, when you have the... Okay, guys, play percentages.
Make something happen.
Yeah, or even if they do want to play a more possession-based game, it's still left to chance, and it's not the same attention to detail in organising a defence, so to speak, in the positioning and so on and so forth. That attention to detail is not given to the attack. And again, going back to the Pogba thing, the Wolves game, he made a great assist, created a goal. United drew one all that game. Mm. He created a goal, great assist, brilliant. He gave the ball away, and there was a lot that happened between that and the Wolves scoring. He got a flak for that.
They dug him out for it.
And he got a lot more criticism for giving the ball away than for the assist, which was a direct effect on the goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that sums up the culture in this country in terms of football and how we approach it and things like that.
Because he's an attacking midfielder, right? Pogba, he's an attacking midfielder.
I would say he's a midfielder with attacking tendencies.
Okay, well, so when you look at what he was doing at United in the youth team and Juve, he was going forward and scoring goals for fun.
He was very advanced, and his game's based on freedom.
And what the saying I love is you can't coach that, right? When you look at the best attacking midfielders in the world, I look at football as an art. They go and express themselves. You restrict that, you lose the art. It's about them just going with feeling. So when you've got someone like Pogba and you're trying to kind of restrict his game, you're going to get less of the play that you actually have.
But where you can't coach certain things, you can create environments where that expression will flourish a lot more.
Which leads me on to a question that's sort of been sitting in me for a little bit. Because you're speaking a lot about the individual and perhaps your book's perhaps more about the individual. But if we talk about the collective here, so if we talk about perhaps team unity or you know, and I think focusing mainly a little bit perhaps more on internationals, and if I mention most specifically, because it's one we're all fairly knowledgeable about, the England team, it seems, that player for player, maybe a couple of tournaments in the last 8 to 10 years, maybe not so much, but if we go back to 2006, the golden generation, they played like there were shackles around them, chains all over them, but you know, one to 23, you know, even a young Theo Walcott, that World Cup squad in 2006 completely underperformed, should have done better than it did. Mm-hmm. But, you know, let's fast forward 10 years. Wales have a world beater in Gareth Bale, but they are half the team that England are, but yet they played with so much self-belief and perhaps, I guess the question I'm trying to get to is there perhaps, you know, something within the collective as well that puts the chain on them? Because as you say, you're restricting players, you're restricting people. So if you're restricting Pogba, if you're, you know, again, you know, using the England team, you're restricting Ali, you're restricting Kane. It's you know, the same issue.
I think when you go back to Golden Generation and you made the connection with Wales, is that Wales are playing their best team. Golden Generation, they didn't play their best team. They played their best players.
Individuals, yeah.
And so, yes, Lampard and all that, great players, but we always forget that they were playing at club football with the best players from other countries. Essien freed up Lampard, and whoever was like Lucas Leiva freed up Gerrard. Now, when you're playing with two guys who are selfish, and this isn't a negative way, by the way, because I think we always assign the word selfish as a negative, but Gerrard would take on that leadership to make something happen for Liverpool, right? Lampard would do that pass, and he's going to save Chelsea. He's going to finish it off. They both can't do that because then they're leaving that space behind them. So now they're playing a game that's completely different to what's been successful to them. The manager who was managing them at the time, whichever the manager it was, should have said, do you know what? One of you going to have to sit down and I'm going to play somebody else and play the best team. And then, I mean, for me, Paul Scholes is my favourite player anyway. But the bottom line is that we were playing the Golden Generation thinking names win you tournaments. Mm. So is it about the team or not? And this is what I say, we always need bravery and courage off the pitch, not just on it. And I don't think that our managers were brave enough.
Just a couple more, Kevin. First of all, if you had the power, would you make it compulsory that every single professional football club had a psychologist?
No.
No?
No. I think going above that, because we have that at a lot of clubs now as part of the EPPP, because what happens is, psychologists, I've got a problem, for example, I go see a psychologist, they help me with it, I go to my coach could be the problem, or he makes my problem worse. So what I would do is I'd make therapy or psychology a part of the coaching badges. That's what I would do. I think that's what's more important.
Okay. And just finally, social media. Now, in the last few weeks, we've seen examples of players getting, it happens every day, but some high-profile examples of players getting really badly abused on social media. Karen Carney had some really foul things said against her. She's the Chelsea and England ladies player. Ashley Young, I saw over the weekend, had something really bad said against him. James McLean is probably the most high-profile person at the moment. He's got some stuff going on in regards to the whole Poppy situation. Wilfried Zaha is another one as well. Similar question. If you had the power, would you ban Premier League players in particular from being on social media?
Nah. I think players need it, and I think also because...
Are there more negatives than positives?
No. And to be honest with you, it's not about other people. I think players should build their brand and make money while they're playing, also when they leave. I think it's more of a... what's the word I'm looking for? A society issue. I think police should be clamping down because they could actually... You know, our phones have sat-navs in them. Do you know, when you do that, it's not about you shutting down your account. You've got 10 followers, you don't care, go and set up another one.
we need to make examples of those people. They should be arrested. There should be a law around it. I don't think we
there
should be
clapping. There are laws around them, but yeah, police aren't going enforce them because to them it's not a serious crime. Yeah,
but I think they should.
I think it's more for the actual platforms to do something.
Yeah, in that. But I just think too many times we look to restrict players, and players are not human anymore. Like, it bores me. I look at, I follow some accounts, and they just put out their football pictures, and it's like, glad we won. Happy to get a goal, or you know what? Oh, we lost. We go again next week. But we've made it like that because anytime something happens, we look to blame the player or look for the player to change. And actually, I want more from the player. I want to get to know them. And even when I see them on the pitch express themselves, they should be able to take off the top without getting booked. They should be able to do this. They should be able to do that. But we're always restricting them.
And this is why it's a shame what we're doing to Paul Pogba, because he epitomises everything of what you've just said. Yeah. He expresses himself brilliantly on the pitch. Yeah. But also, he's the modern day footballer for this generation of football fans, because the access he gives his fans is brilliant. You see his mum, you see his auntie, he's always dancing on Instagram with his brothers. You see him, you know, on photo shoots for Adidas and wherever, and you get to, like you say, find out a little bit about the individual, the haircuts and the dancing and the dabbing. That's Paul Pogba, but we're just curtailing
and
that.
And he's ultra professional.
Yeah, with it. So he's not just a joker.
So yeah, exactly. Why, he's ultra professional in his behaviour and how he takes his profession very seriously.
Why do people, and I'm not speaking about the people in this room here, I'm just talking about wider society, why do people hate that so much?
I think it's an English thing.
I think it's jealousy. I do think it is to do with this country.
We're conservative. We don't like brashness and confidence.
But I'm going to be honest and quite forthright. A lot of it is to do with he's foreign. I don't know if it's a race thing, honestly. I'll just be honest. Fair. And I think all these things come into it, culture. And then there's a jealousy as well.
But I just want to interrupt you because you said you're going to be honest. You know it's a race thing. So don't say, you said, I'm going to be honest. I think it's a race thing.
You sensed yourself a little bit.
Yeah, let's keep it 100.
You know no. And that's not like
reason,
you.
No. Let me be honest. The reason why I have to say I think is because I don't have
proof.
Exact proof.
No, but
I'm pretty sure. Okay.
Yeah.
So more than I think.
But yeah, exactly. That's what I'm just saying. So we know that those things take place, right? So that is for sure. But my issue is this. Look, when it comes to behaviour, no one's right. Right? If I've got an opinion about you, you've got an opinion about me, that's what we think. But we must be consistent. So for example, people are hammering him now about social media, dancing, all that. But Adidas and Man United benefit from that. Mm-hmm. When they announced him, you got Stormzy and all of that. So my thing is this. You knew what you were buying. You guys are making millions off of it. You're making money from the culture and he's endorsing the culture. Don't say nothing. Don't buy him. Simple. But you can't, when it doesn't go well, talk about his haircut.
And then the general
to be
public,
fair, it's not United that do that. It's the media.
Touching on the general public. The general public that are criticising him. Use social media in the same ways that he does.
They blame his lack of form, and I put lack of form in inverted commas because, all right, I know he struggled a little bit, but perhaps that's for another time. They blame that on, he should spend less time on building his emoji and spend more time in, you know, perfecting his craft on the training pitch.
Yeah, it's nonsense.
The game needs people like Pogba.
I totally agree.
And, sorry, just to finish
on, final one.
He actually does spend a lot of time perfecting his craft and honing his craft. He is an ultra professional. He looks after himself very well. He isn't one. I don't think he even drinks any alcohol.
He doesn't drink.
I know he's a devout Muslim.
He is.
He spends a lot of time. His mum lives with him a lot of times when she's in the country. These things like that. And all the social media videos we see are, as you said, indoors with his family. Yeah. They're not him falling out of pubs drunk, this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. But then, again, all these other elements come into it.
I think it's a British thing.
I was going to say, can I just quickly touch on that? One thing I love about this is, remember, because we say fans, but people on like Match of the Day comment on this, right? But it's important we pay attention to this because these are people that have played the game. They're big names in the game,
that's
right?
That's disappointing as well.
But do you know why? It's disappointing, but they tell you, they show their limits of ability. If I'm someone sitting on that couch and saying, oh yeah, social media, that tells you that I don't really know much. If I'm judging his performances on that, what does that tell you about me?
Mm.
And this is how we've got to start looking at it. Because I'm looking at you as a former pro. What?
Give me
social
something
media?
More than that, yeah.
You've got to be specific. And this is, and what makes it worse, you see back in the day when those guys were playing, they were going out and getting drunk.
They were the worst.
Trash,
they were
trash diets. Listen, I know at Charlton, right? Charlton were in the Premier League when I was there. We had like a Christmas do. Alcohol was throughout the changing rooms. throughout. We just finished training. I'm like, what is going on here? It's different, completely different.
Kevin, listen, thank you very much for coming on the show today. Listen, for anyone that wants to get a copy of your book, where can they find it?
So they can find it on my website, which is kevin-george.com, or you can find out through the details through my Twitter, which is _KevinGeorge, Instagram, I am Kevin George, and through my publishers, which is Own It.
Brilliant. I've enjoyed that so much, Kevin. It's really good to get someone in the studio that's not only played the game, come out of the game, and taken a different route post-football that wasn't, you know, involving punditry or coaching. So cheers for your time, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
All the best with it.
Cheers.